Welcome to Clarity Lab, where I talk to leading health and science experts to educate, inform, and dismantle misinformation. And if you are a human on this planet in 2025, you probably know what a problem misinformation is. I'm Derek Barris, and Clarity Lab is the official podcast of Cyrus Health, a 501c3 nonprofit I founded to build a free educational platform and curate social media channels that feature experts presenting health and science in a clear and compelling manner. And since we are a nonprofit, all your donations are tax deductible, which helps support our mission. Please visit cyrushealth.org to learn about what we're doing and what we plan to do in the future. And if you can support us, we would greatly appreciate it. Misinformation, where to begin? I don't think a long prelude is necessary when we're discussing the battle for credible information, which is rampant on social media. So I'll cut to the chase. I wanted to talk to someone who spends their entire day researching this topic. And that person is Matthew Facciani. We talk about a range of topics, including his definitions of misinformation versus disinformation, how we engage with algorithms. And since he personally has an interest and background in health misinformation, he's a perfect addition to the Clarity Lab catalog. Matthew Facciani is a postdoctoral researcher at the University of Notre Dame. He is an interdisciplinary social scientist with a background in neuroscience and psychology and a PhD in sociology. His first book, Misguided, Where Misinformation Starts, How It Spreads, and What to Do About It, will be published by Columbia University Press in July. He's always posting very interesting research on Threads and Blue Sky, so I'll include those links in the show notes. Enjoy our conversation. Matthew, you've decided to take on one of the most challenging fields imaginable, which is understanding and combating misinformation. When did you realize you wanted to put yourself through this hell?
Well, my journey into studying this started as an undergraduate when I became really fascinated with psychology. I've always been interested in how psychological bias impacts us, how social influence impacts us. And I thought I wanted to study it pretty early on in college, although I bounced around a little bit from neuroscience to social psychology to where I am today, more of like interdisciplinary social science. So originally, I started studying neuroscience at the graduate school level, looking at fMRI research and neural decoding and really trying to see like how we can study how our brain works on a very micro level. And then I realized I was interested in these broader social questions such as beliefs and ideology and these big questions that led me to switch my direction to social psychology and sociology in graduate school, where I studied political beliefs and religious beliefs. That was, you know, 2014, 2015, 2016. So I was studying beliefs and bias and misinformation right before it became much more popular. So I've always been interested in like why people think the way they do. And it just kind of naturally evolved into being directly in the misinformation world.
Popular is one term for it, that's for sure. You were a lecturer and researcher in Medicine, Health, and Society Department at Vanderbilt. Now, you flagged you had some neuroscience research. Are there other areas of health that you've looked into?
One of the big reasons why I was interested in health was when I graduated from my sociology program, it was right in the middle of COVID-19. I finished like June 2020 when I was looking for opportunities to work at places. This postdoc opportunity came up at Vanderbilt in the Health Medicine Society Department. It was something that was very interesting to me to apply all the political issues and challenges that we saw with COVID-19, a way to try to study that and just look at health more broadly. Again, looking at beliefs and information with a focus on health, since I saw that intersection very directly. Just where I was in my graduate training just happened to lead me to this COVID path. Even though I didn't study COVID, it wasn't the only thing I studied, but it definitely was some motivation to make me move more into health directly.
One of the things that I see wellness influencers say sometimes is that health is not political. What are your feelings on that?
I mean, I think everything is political. Whenever someone says it's not political, it seems like a way to deflect from something they don't want to talk about, at least in my experience. Because it's definitely political. I mean, public health is representing all of us. We're all working, hopefully, together as a society. And that also means involving public agencies and government and states. Like, it's all connected. We all live on this planet together. And as we saw again with the pandemic, like, everyone can be impacted by it. It's not something that only affects a few people. So, definitely would disagree that it's not political.
Same. And these are the same influencers who will never talk about the social determinants of health. So it lines up.
Right.
We're recording this a few days after Mark Zuckerberg announced that he would stop fact-checking on Meta's networks. And the other morning, I heard Scott Galloway mention that him disbanding that department will directly lead to billions of dollars in his own pocket, basically. I noticed you posted recently a study that found that community notes are actually more powerful than network-created misinformation flags, which is actually something Zuckerberg's used in his defense, not that study, but that idea. But I want to be clear, you did caveat that it's a nuanced and complex topic. So can you unpack that study and that research a little bit?
Yeah, it's definitely nuanced. And that's why, among all of the things that were discussed among Meta's recent changes, the move towards crowdsourced fact-checking, it might end up being more of a net neutral impact. Like, it really depends on the details. Like, the details matter a ton, and the nuance matters a ton as far as how it's being implemented, because there is some really positive work showing that people do trust these crowdsourced fact-checks. And they do align with a lot of professional fact checkers, and a lot of the community notes that people use, use professional fact checkers to justify their arguments. And a lot of crowdsourced fact checks tend to be pretty good, at least in some of these studies, as long as the groups are politically balanced and the higher amount of education and knowledge that these groups have, the better the outcomes. So it's tricky that there's a lot of factors that go into how well the notes will work, but there is some encouraging research already showing that crowdsourcing fact-checking can be effective. It's not something that's completely removing this idea of fact-checking completely. It's replacing it in a way that could have some positives, and with the positives and the negatives that come with it, there were already positive and negatives with the previous approach.
Reactions are very interesting to me because I notice every time I lose some followers on Threads, I get more on Blue Sky. And that's been a phenomenon that's been going on for almost the last year. I follow you on both. Have you noticed any differences in how those platforms manage misinformation or how users react to it?
It's been an interesting journey to see both of those social medias evolve, because I was at the very beginning. I can't remember the last time I was at the beginning of, I mean, I was, I guess, kind of at the beginning of Facebook and MySpace, but it was a long time ago. Things are very different. I mean, it was interesting, like, how Meta first to try to approach misinformation around COVID and vaccines. If you remember, they would just remove the search vaccine or COVID-19. Like, you couldn't search that, and it just gave you a link to, like, the CDC or something, which was not great. And it really was an admission on their part that they couldn't properly moderate the content surrounding those topics. And now the search is open, and I guess they were trying to moderate it. And it seemed to work okay, as far as what I could tell from searching vaccine and COVID-19. I mean, the search definitely has some limitations on Threads, but at least you could find relevant information. I get in some trouble among my liberal followers whenever I point out some of the conspiratorial thinking that I see, such as the claim that, Trump somehow cheated this last time in this election. Like, I haven't seen any evidence to suggest that, and a lot of the people working in those agencies that collect the votes said they didn't see any evidence of foul play. When I made a post like that, a lot of people say, like, oh, how, like, we're just asking questions, like, we just want to know the truth. And it was very similar to, like, what we saw on the right. But again, the important caveat of that is, at the highest levels of government, we didn't see that among the left that we did on the right last time.
I'm a bit older than you, so I was early on Friendster. So
Okay, nice.
and I was building websites on GeoCities in the 90s, so I'm definitely revealing my age. One question we've long entertained on conspirituality, that's actually kind of two, because we do look at left-leaning conspiracy theories as well, because they are real. And the way that information moves through those networks is, I don't think, as overly egregious as the right, because the right has an entire conservative media ecosystem behind them as well. But they are also there. But another question we have is, What are the real-world consequences of this misinformation that we're studying and identifying online? What sort of real-world effects have you seen from the misinformation that you've studied?
I think, again, it goes back to health. I mean, that's one of the big ones where we see like direct impacts of people believing things that are not true. The things that I think are most damaging are when people avoid evidence-based treatments when they're sick and they get even more sick, even to a point where maybe they can't be helped because the illness has progressed so much, such as with cancer, for example, that they end up, you know, getting really sick or even dying. I mean, those are like some of the most dire consequences of false information we see online, where people will find some alternative treatment, whether that's, you know, crystals or supplements or whatever it is. They seek that out because they're being lied to. And, you know, they're in a very anxious place where they're looking for any type of answers or control. The illness progresses and it gets a lot worse, and then it might be too late for them to get the evidence-based medicine that they need. So that's why I focus a lot on health misinformation, because it can be so damaging.
We're currently looking down the barrel of two different phenomena that I think will affect misinformation greatly. That's my personal belief. One is AI, and another is the second Trump administration. What are your feelings on those two things and what they're going to do to misinformation?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be very challenging. It's going to be a very difficult time and in the future. I don't know how to say this in any sort of silver lining or be overly optimistic here. I'm just trying to be realistic. It's going to be a challenge. With AI in particular, there's a lot of discussion about AI and misinformation, right? And I think some of it is overblown sometimes. For example, the actual impact on AI created misinformation, it's unclear really what that impact will even be, because people are already seeking out information that aligns with their political ideology, right? So you don't need the sophisticated fake video to try to convince someone if you can just show video game footage and they believe that to be true if it aligns with their priors. So we saw that a lot already, where people will share something from a video game that's like a war scene, and it'll be shared millions of times on X, and people will agree with it if the commentary aligns with their ideology. The underlying division and tribalism and hostility people have towards different groups, I think that's the larger backdrop that's even more damaging than the type of junk that will be produced by artificial intelligence. But it's still a huge issue, because it's so easy to create disinformation and create up a bot that actually writes in coherent sentences and just creates so much noise. I think that's one of the worst things about AI and the content it allows for at scale, is the amount of noise and cynicism that can bring, and some of the distrust that brings with people just like, oh, you can't trust anything on the internet. I worry about that people just kind of check out and don't have a motivation to investigate information more critically.
You brought up the term disinformation there, and I've talked to Renee DiResta a few times about her idea of the differences between misinformation and disinformation. I know people have different thoughts on that. How do you distinguish between those two things?
Yeah, so misinformation I use as a very broad umbrella term for anything that's false or misleading. So just false or misleading information, regardless of intent. And then disinformation is purposeful. So you're purposely trying to mislead someone for some type of goal. And again, it's still pretty broad. And disinformation can be challenging because you don't always know the intentions that people have. I mean, you can assume sometimes with a pretty good degree of confidence, but it's hard to prove a lot of the times. Disinformation is purposeful with a goal in mind.
And it's hard to prove because you open yourself up to defamation if you make those accusations.
Yeah, for sure. I often use misinformation because it's easier, but because now misinformation is such a broad term, kind of loses some meaning too. Like everything else, it could be politicized or misunderstood. Sometimes it helps to be just specific with like, this is false or misleading, instead of even using the word misinformation.
I don't know if you've noticed this, but there have been a few wellness contrarians who are specifically posting about people who use the term misinformation are actually the problem. So if you see this, you shouldn't trust those people. Have you come across any of this?
Every now and then I'll get a comment online about, oh, you study misinformation, you just want to censor people.
Yeah.
Interesting, because I'm like, well, where did you learn that from? And like, who told you this? Because if you look at any of my work, none of it is about censorship or regulation. It's all about understanding belief systems and then working on media literacy programs. I tend to be very strong on my own personal beliefs about freedom of speech and freedom of expression. It's interesting that those kind of narratives exist, and it's a way to just kind of dismiss criticism that you don't want to hear. It's just easy to lump someone in a group and automatically cast them away. I mean, it's classic, and it's frustrating, but it's definitely out there.
I'm going to guess that the people who comment that have not read your academic papers.
Yeah, I think so. Some of them, the comments, gave me the motivation to write just a quick newsletter post about like what exactly is a misinformation researcher. I describe like what I do and how none of it has anything to do with any type of censorship or regulation or even like working with social media companies. And it's really just about understanding beliefs and behavior and information processing. That in of itself, some people may find troubling if they don't want to admit to themselves that they might be biased. I mean, no one likes to think that they're biased. So it's kind of a tough thing to discuss sometimes, but I think it's very important to try to be aware of our biases so then we are less easily manipulated.
I did read that one, and I'm also looking forward to reading your book that's out in a few months, which is called Misguided, Where Misinformation Starts, How It Spreads, and What to Do About It. Can you give some high-level overview of why you chose to write this book, as well as possibly end with some things that casual people on social media who aren't as steeped in this stuff as we are can take away to help them learn how to identify red flags when they're seeing people post?
A lot of the motivations behind the book deal with the social psychology of misinformation, how we're susceptible to it based on the social and psychological influence that we have. And I tackle it from a perspective of identities and how if we have these identities that are very powerful and motivate us to see the world in a way that affirms those identities, then we can be susceptible to misinformation. And I talk about how we can measure that impact through the types of identities we have and how much shared meaning they have. And basically, the goal is to be having a diverse set of identities that are independent from each other. So you're not so dependent on this narrow set of meanings that give you all of your self-esteem and self-worth. So at a high level, I think of the social impact of like, okay, if we can move towards a society where we're not so siloed and we're more interconnected, then we are able to absorb information that might conflict with one identity because we have a whole host of important identities that matter to us. And then as far as like day-to-day identifying misinformation, there's all sorts of resources for identifying the credibility of sources. What would be helpful is, you know, if people wanted to think about how to fact check, for example, a lot of times it's important to see what are the motivations of the particular writer or avenue that you're fact checking. Like what's do they have agenda? Who's funding them? What's the background that they have and what kind of audience are they seeking? Even before you dive into the actual content of the article that they wrote about, try to see their perspective and their values and their politics and try to see where they're coming from. So I think those types of approaches can be very helpful for the average person just looking at content online.